Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the My Lowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter, and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast. It's the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Peter and Steve. You're right, lads.
Hello.
Lads. Hello. So I can sense Steve already. We're waiting for you to come online, Pete, here, and Steve's there going,
I'm not very well.
You say you're not very well. It's self-inflicted. Where have you been, you little socialite?
I went to an opening of a new bar, which opens in Cardiff, so just had a little bit of a free bar there.
I saw that. It was the Philharmonic, isn't it, in Cardiff?
Yeah.
I saw an Instagram picture saying, fair play, the Philly's looking nice. That's all the review they want, isn't it, Steve, from you? Fair play, the Philly's looking nice.
what more can you say on an Instagram post?
I don't know. Fair play. So, what's it like now? Is the Philharmonic is opposite the stadium, isn't it?
It's not really opposite the stadium, but it's around that area, yeah.
Where is it then?
St. Mary Street.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing to no one.
It was the old big one. Well, some people have been to Cardiff, been to the ground. Lots of people have been to the Millennium Stadium for football or rugby. The big one on the corner there, was it?
No.
Philharmonic, where's that by then? Oh, further down, next to the square.
Where's that by then?
Next to the square.
That's the one.
What have they done to it then? Any good? Is the square still there? Let's just get really esoteric.
You went there when you were last down into Coyote Ugly, didn't it?
Oh, that's the new square, is it? Let's get really local on your ass. So the square is now Coyote Ugly. And do you know what? I think it's a very clever thing they did there, because Coyote Ugly is supposed to be a redneck bar, isn't it, essentially? And if you go in there, it is essentially like a redneck, but they've done it up, you don't have to do it up because it's a rough-looking bar. So it's very clever. You go in, the toilets are flooded with beer and urine. And I'm thinking, they could just say that's part of the theme, can't they?
We went there last night and there was a Brocken Bronco.
A Brocken Bronco.
And I woke up this morning fully clothed, still drank, with literally cuts and bruises all down my arms from obviously going on it.
Yeah. I think I was going to say, I woke up next to the bull. I brought him home. I was that drunk. Well, it's a good night then. So you went to Philly, but you didn't stay there. So how do you get free drinks then? What's the deal there, Steve?
It was a pre-launch night for certain people. So obviously I'm up there with those certain people that gets invited to these things.
Yeah, but they're glad they invited you, and you can do the social media reviews like that, you know. Philly's not looking too bad.
Fair play.
Okay, cool. So, BT, I bought some more BT, personal BT. You know, I know we've got this experiment, £1,000 to £100,000, 50 trades are left on big stocks, pay a dividend. We're on trade three with BT. I bought some more in the week, just for myself, because I think I'm convinced the chart pattern here, and I think all the rubbish is behind them. They released a trading update. It did drop over 4% a day, but I've been watching it on a shorter time frames on the chart a little bit, minute time frames. And as we look now, we're recording this, the market hasn't closed yet, Friday, but it's £3.09, so it's above our buy-in price, and I think it's going to do well, guys. I think we're we're going to see a little bit of resistance here, a little bit of resistance here, come back a little bit, maybe £3. But I think we're on the up here, guys.
Right.
Because they did report. So the results were, what was it, first quarter, I think the results were for. And I think the first quarter results were down, or second quarter results were down, 42% pre-tax profit. But that was because of the Italian, you know, sort of mess over there, the Italian spaghetti mess they got themselves into, where, you know, someone been fiddling money away or doing something. And so they're sorting that out. So that's out the way now. And I just think that the rest of the business was quite good. Revenue's up by 1%. So I just think, you know, we've come down from like pretty much £5 to £3 here. And yet they're sorting the business out. And it'll be all the better for it, I think, methinks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm. What does a minute chart do for you that an hourly one doesn't?
Well, normally, by default, when you're looking to bring up a chart up and you put candlesticks on a chart, then it's a day. Each candlestick represents a day. And you can change the time frames. You can change it an hour, you can change it a month, a week, 5 minutes, you know. So a minute just shows you, and obviously when it's a big trade, a big stock like BT has traded a lot, then it's quite accurate. And so you can see a minute trading. You see, I could see it bottoming out. In fact, I'll put it on a minute now.
When you say a minute trading, is that pretty much a live?
Pretty much, yes, yes, real time. Yeah. Real time. I'm using a chart called investing.com. But you could see, pretty much when it got down to, I think we're going to get down to the low on the Friday, got down to about £3 in the minute. And then it came past the 20-day moving average, 50-day moving average, up past the 125, then it consolidated a bit, then it went through the 200-day moving average, and then it started rising, then back towards £3.10. So I think, it's all right, you lads. I think we're all right. I mean, it'll be resistance at £3.12, I think, because that's where it gapped down on Friday. But I think we're okay for this trade, guys. I think it was okay. It's going to work.
Okay, good.
Unlike an example, I said, guys, I want to start a new experiment, right, which is in penny stocks. And I did some iterations of it. And I said, let's try, 100 trades at 10%, or 7,000 trades at 1%. Or and then a happy medium was like 15 trades achieving 40%, going from 1,000 to 150,000. Is that right? I think it was. Yeah, yeah.
What?
Was that what we did there? Yeah.
No, we usually do 21 trades, don't we?
No, 15 trades. I said, we want to bring it to not too many trades because it'd take too long.
So 100,000.
15 trades will take a little while. So 100,000. Was it 200,000 or 100,000? I don't know. Anyway.
100,000.
Was it?
Wasn't it?
No.
How many experiments are we going to do? I do. It did make me think, whatever happened to the original penny pump, whatever. Penny
I'm still going pump? On, but it hasn't gone anywhere. Listen, the thing is, I know.
Remind us of what that was. It was African potash.
It was doubled. And then it went bust. So I decided to start again. But, that was like a year ago now. And you realise, a year in the world of penny stocks, a lot, you've learned a lot, you know? Yeah. And if I'd known then what I know now, I probably wouldn't have gone into it. So these were the iterations. But I want to do a penny stock. Wait, that was basically on 100% gain.
Wait. So that was the original. Then we did then you did a second one of that.
Yeah, Kefi. That's still happening. Kefi's still there. So it's basically flat at the moment on that. Right. But it's going to work. I haven't sold it. It's going to work because this is all, hinging on them getting finance for their.
I'm just echoing what I think some of the listeners will be thinking. You're like, hold on, things don't work. And
I can't help it if a board can't get their act together, get the finance together. That was supposed to be. If you look at their RNS leases, you'll see how delayed they've been. They've been talking about this financing going for a year now. I think, what the heck is going on? And to be honest, I'm not a big fan of the chairman. If I'd known a bit more about penny stocks before going into it, I wouldn't have. I don't have confidence in him at all. But nevertheless, I think they're at the final few stages now. They've secured most of the financing for this mine, the construction of the mine. Once they get it, the final bit, I think they're short about, is it 6 million or something? So out of 120 odd million or 130 million, it's not too bad. It's not far off, but I think it will work out. But it's just now, it's like trialing error, isn't it? You have to sort of hone what you know? So we did decide to go with, these are the options I gave you. I said £1,000 to £100,000 in 21 trades or less, achieving 25% gain on each share. Or £1,000 to £100,000 in 18 trades or less, achieving 30% gain each share. Or £1,000 to £300,000 in 20 trades or less, achieving 33% gain each share. Or £1,000 to £150,000 in 15 trades or less, achieving 40% gain or more. And I think that's the best one, because there's less trades, so less chance to mess up. But 40% on penny stocks is achievable. I've got several penny stocks in my portfolio that are way above 40%. And I haven't got a huge amount way above 100%. You know, I've got like two or three, I think. So it's achievable. But yeah, I decided to go with ECR, first one last week. And I said, wait. There may be a release out on drill results very soon. And then I emailed on the Monday.
Did you remember, sit here and wait, Pete? I didn't get that one.
No, I said, listen, they've got cash, they've got a capable of board, the drilling in these areas, that, you know, a prolific gold area in Victoria, in Australia. And then on Monday, they came up with an RS before, obviously, they opened. I said to you, if I you, do your own research, I said first, but barn the bell, and it should double from here, because it's 1.4, 1.3, something like that it was. And then I sent an email after the RNS has come out at 7 a.m, so the market wasn't open. I said to you, don't buy, they've released drill results, it isn't looking fantastic at the moment, it's only a small exploration, and they've done so far, it's not a huge amount, so they're going to do more exploration, and you probably get better results and more upside. In the meantime, Pete didn't read the email, and he bought on the bell. I mean, it did open about 20% down, and he bought on the bell, and now he's about 25% down. But
But I didn't get any notification.
Email. It's called electronic mail.
We never talk on email. We always talk on WhatsApp, and you sent an email. Why did you do that?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I wrote a letter to you.
But hang on. We've been...
Next day delivery.
On this particular thread, we'd had a number of discussions. First of all, I said, this is on penny stocks, so the term we're after is bigger. And then you come back, and I said, right, I think our next one could be ECR. And we were chatting about it. And so I thought I'd keep it on that thread, because we've been chatting on that thread about this very experiment, in my defence, actually.
Yeah. Right, brilliant.
So you're...
I missed that.
Even Matt, when you look at it, right, ECR, an excellent chance. I mean, they're in a very good jurisdiction in Australia, you know, really pro-mining, Victoria in Australia, which is like, you know, a prolific gold area, one of the biggest in the world of producing gold. So you've narrowed down the chances, but you realise exploration is still very dodgy, you know, it's not dodgy, but very risk. It's got a lot of risk still, right? And so even that, I'm thinking now, for going forward, maybe not even look at exploration like that, unless they've done exploration already, not initial exploration, which they're doing there, which is too risky, you know? If they're proving up a bit, and you wait for a stock to come back, so you know a stock has risen on good exploration results, then it's come back, that's the time to get in. So you're always honing the experiment, you know what I'm saying? Always honing. Guys, I'll get it down to a formula sooner or later, and we'll be billionaires within 5 years. Once I get the formula nailed, we'll do it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
But that's a good experiment.
You can't keep just giving up. You've got to, you know, you've got to go for it. Sooner or later, you learn. You learn, Mr. Faulty. I learn.
Yeah. You learn to look out for all forms of communication.
You do some more like Derek Trotter every day, though, Justin.
You know nothing.
This time next year, Rodney.
Yeah, Mr. Faulty, I learn. You know nothing. No, you know nothing. No, I learn. Do you remember that on Folly Towers? Do you remember that? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Guys, am I talking to myself? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Vaguely.
Do you, Steve? No, you don't remember it, do you? Basil Fawlty in Folly Towers had won some money on a horse, right? But he told to keep the money. Was his name Manuel? Andrew Sachs, who's now dead. He told him to keep the money. He said, listen, don't tell Sybil. Don't tell anything about this. Don't tell anything about it at all. And then some money went missing from the hotel, didn't they? And this lady came down and saw Manuel with it. She said, oh, it's my money. Took the money off. So no. So they had to explain it all. And she said to Manuel, first of all, he said, forget everything about that, Manuel. So then he reminded him, Manuel, tell him the truth. He said, I know nothing. He said, no, tell him the truth. He said, I know nothing. He said, no, tell him, forget that, you know nothing, no. He said, no, I know nothing. He was very proud of it. He just walked off smiling. Anyway, So, but he was just saying, when he said, you know nothing, Manuel, he said, no, but I learn. I'm new, I'm from Barcelona, but I learn. And that's what it's all about, learning, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not a failure. Do you understand that? And a lot of people say, you should never be afraid to fail, because when you fail, you learn. You only fail, actually, if you don't learn anything from the loss. And that's, you know, people, you become a better investor if you learn. Every time you lose some money, you learn from it. As long as you manage your risk and don't lose a lot, you know, then that's the first lesson you should learn, actually. Don't put the lot on one stock, Steve.
Yes, well, I've learned that, haven't I? Yeah.
You learn, yeah? You learn. Yes?
Mm.
Do you know what I do like? And I'm thinking, I love tech stocks. I really love tech stocks. And I think, and we've talked about this before, stocks, you know, in their exploration, tech and biotech or pharma have explosive, you know, sort of potential, you know, because they can go from being nothing to amazing. And this week on the podcast, I chatted to a guy, and it's a tech stock, pretty much, that I love. Just so, you know, they say, any business, any good business, you have to solve a problem, you know? And they say, and, you know, what's the phrase? Necessity is the mother of all inventions. So you need, something's needed, you know, to invent something. And I chatted to this guy, his name is Keith, the executive chairman there, they solve two massive problems in today's society, and it's almost too good to be true. And I said, but it isn't. I mean, and it's the company is Powerhouse Energy. It's been around for a while in several iterations, and like I said, they've got new tech. They're trying to get it right. But this recent iteration they've got, it's gone through all the tests, and they are proudly, you know, very supremely confident, this is it. And I'm with them. They've got, and so the problems it solves, and they're massive problems, especially in light of recent government moves to try and ban petrol and diesel by 2014. Other governments around the world doing it. You've got Norway doing it by 2025. I think Netherlands as well, 2025. India by 2030. So, you know, big economies and developed economies. And so they're going clean energy. So first of all, there's hunger for clean energy, right, in the world, and there's electricity needed. And yet we can't produce that amount of electricity. It's nuts. You can't do that. So at the moment, we need to do something about it. And secondly, you've got a massive amount of waste being, you know, thrown away, landfilled, unrecycled. And I did a bit of research on this, right? I didn't know this. You know, they've put on plastic bottles, they've got recyclable, and you put it in your recycle bin. Have a guess what percentage of plastic that's got the symbol on the back saying recyclable is actually recycled. Have a guess.
50%.
Steve, lower. Steve? Have a guess 20. Have a guess, what percentage of plastic is actually recycled? It says recycled in the bottle. Have a guess. You say 20. Lower. Pete.
Stroke there.
Pete. Peter. Lower.
Lower.
Lower than 20. What are you going with?
18.
Lower than 18. Steve.
10.
Lower than 10. Pete.
7.
Higher than 7. Steve.
8.
Higher than 8. Peter.
8.5.
Higher than 8.5. Steve.
9.
Oh, yes. Well done, Steve. Ooh, did you do well? Lovely. Off you go to teddy bear. So that's not. These are stats. They're phenomenal. Right. In the last 70 years, around 8.3 billion tons of plastic have been produced, right? This is as heavy as 25,000 Empire State Buildings in New York or a billion elephants. Only around 9% of all plastic is recycled. More than 70% of the total production is now in waste streams, sent largely to landfill. Most of it just litters the wider environment, including the oceans. And they said, in fact, more than 8 million tons of plastic are dumped in our oceans every year. Current trends point towards 12 billion tons of waste by 2050, which means there'll be more plastic in the oceans than fish by weight.
Right. So what I don't understand is who's dumping it in the ocean? That's a really
we can't recycle it. I mean, first of all, people on beaches and all that, we can't recycle it, but a lot of it goes to landfill, it goes back in the system. So essentially, now, this is where Powerhouse Energy come in. They've got this unit. It's phenomenal. It is like Back to the Future. So you can chuck in, right, tyres, which are hugely, for years and years. You know, you have to pay people to take tyres away. I know this because my father You used to have a tire bay. And you said, if the people are taken away, and people, and you get scoundrels who pretend to be taking them away, and they've got to pay a license to get them done and incinerated properly. But yeah. Some people don't even do that, just dump them again. So there's a whole huge problem with tires. Now, they've got this unit called G3 unit, powers energy. You can put plastic into it, you can put tires into it, right? And it basically, after, I think, 1200 degrees heat, and it gasifies it, there's no emissions. Now, that's very important. There's no emissions from this machine. Now, other places like incinerators and all that, they have emissions, bad, you know, smoke coming off it. So I don't know, the technology is obviously highly secretive, but it's part of the technology because it's gasified. And from that, they produce syngas. And from that, they can produce hydrogen. Now, hydrogen-fueled vehicles is a massive thing. Toyota and other big companies are looking into that. They've done a lot with it. And in fact, hydrogen is more efficient than electric cars. Because electric cars, and people are looking into this and saying hydrogen cars are the way forward, hydrogen fuel cells.
But so they've not quite worked out how to safely produce it, though. That's the problem with hydrogen, isn't it?
No, they're there, electric fuel cells, hydrogen fuel cells. The only problem is how to produce it. Exactly, how to produce it. But this company does it. As I said, there's two different ways. Keith came on and said there's two different ways of producing hydrogen. One is not carbon friendly at all, because you can produce more sort of CO2 than you do hydrogen, but 10 times more and 19 times more. And the other one takes a lot of electricity. So you need a lot of electricity, which is a false economy, because you're producing, you have to burn, you know, fossil fuel or something, or to generate the electricity to create hydrogen. Their system doesn't. It's like, I thought, really? So you essentially say, well, you're taking a stuff that no one needs and everyone hates, like plastics that are cheaply made and chucked away, or tires that no one needs, you put it into their G3 machine and it comes up with something everyone uses or wants, so they can produce electricity via syngas or hydrogen. And so you imagine the potential for this, right? For like, you know, all, it's municipals and councils are in charge of landfill sites pretty much, aren't they? But you imagine their vehicles, all powered on hydrogen. They've got one of these modular gas units, which they're all modular. They're like a container, you know, one of these modern-day containers you ship abroad. About the size of that, it fits in there. So you put one on the next to the amenity site, you know. You put all the stuff in the one end, fuel their trucks from the other side, and then you've got a heck of a lot less landfill, which costs a lot of money this day and age, because you're fine, you know, through EU and all that, and you're also fueling the trucks. That is phenomenal. Isn't it? You imagine they're making money, and they're saving money at the same time. They're getting rid of bad waste no one wants and creating energy. To me, that's phenomenal. They're now at the cutting edge of technology. Mm. No one's ever done this before in the way they've done it. And I'm thinking, this kind of stock is completely blue sky. You know, if this catches on and if this works out, even if they've done a sort of deal, a fundraising deal, with a subsidiary of a major conglomerate in this country. And all they have to do is prove that this machine works. And they've done it, so they had it built in Australia, but they've brought it over to the UK, and they've had it get it reconfigured via EU and UK electricity certification. So they're going to get certification on it, prove it works, which they've proved in Australia that it's worked, but they're just going to redo it to this company. And the company's going to order 5 units from it already, and they're going to use, I think, £500,000 in fundraising as well. So,
so the only problems that could go wrong here is if they don't get it UK certified, I guess.
Yeah, but that's not hard. It's not hard, because it's all about they're taking it completely apart, and they reckon that's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. If it's UK certified and EU certified, then sky's the limit. And I'm just thinking, it is like that. What do they call it? The flux capacitor in Back to the Future, where they had that. When the guy, do you remember, come back and Doc came back from the future, and he just before they needed like a thunderbolt, like a one, what was it, 1.9 gigabytes, or gigawatts.
They needed nuclear uranium, didn't they?
Yes, and then all they had was like a blender on top. You just chucked in bananas things, but it's essentially it is that, isn't it? And you're thinking, you're just taking something no one wants, everyone hates, puts it in one end, and comes out the other end, everything wants clean energy. And it's no emissions. There's no even exhaust flue from this thing. And I just think, do you know what? This is what everyone in the world's want. Everyone is now wanting the clean energy. This is perfect. So I'm just thinking, if they are at the cutting edge, this is a multi-billion pound opportunity if it pays off. Of course, there's risk, but I'm prepared to take the risk on this, because I just think, you know, it solves two massive problems. You know what I'm saying? That's why I said to you the other day, I did WhatsApp you, and you kept making fun of me, saying, yes, he's another one of these, another one of those. And I said, listen, this is... And they're on the very edge of commercialisation. They've been working this technology for years and for years, and so there are some people a bit jaded with the stock because it's been through several iterations. But this final one they've got, they've worked it all out, what they need to do, and essentially it's you know, they're on the edge of it. And like certification is the first thing they're going to do, and I think around about September probably, or towards not even towards the end of the year, they'll be doing a private trial and a public trial of it. And and then I think then people will sort of realise, wow, this is amazing. You can put rubbish in, get amazing stuff out the back. And I sent an email. I said, Keith, and you know about this, Peter. I said, what you need to do is get a graphical representation, a little video to show how this works. Yeah. I don't think people understand this. Because you've got two problems, you know. So basically everyone's clean energy, not enough electricity. There's lots of landfill going on, too much going on. And we can't sustain that amount of landfill. And you're creating a huge solution here. And I said, and I also said, when you do that trial, get it filmed and produced properly, because if it, you know, if it's working, that is groundbreaking, absolutely groundbreaking. And like I said, it's modular, so it means there's no problem with scale, because all they do is just add another module, so they can do. I think the one they look at the moment is doing it 1 to 3 tons. That's all. Then it's going to be ramped up to 25 tons of waste per day, I think. Then obviously you can just add modules, so as much as you want.
So how does it work? Like, so who's the customer? Ultimately,
well, the customer's anyone.
That's a really, broad answer.
No. Okay, first and foremost, municipal councils are in charge of landfill. All right, yeah. They've got to pay a lot of money to have landfill their stuff. It costs them a lot. There's EU fines in that. I mean, I did look at the figures, but I obviously forget the figures. But the fines are going up and up. They're trying to eradicate landfill because it's basically bad for the environment. It's leaking into soils, into waters, and they can't. It's not sustainable. And also, like I said, there's a place yourself. I mean, there's pools of plastics in the ocean, and you can see a map. I googled it. There's pools of plastic in the ocean, and there's one of them the size of Texas. Off the coast of America, literally on the killing fish, you know, and you see these horrible pictures of these fish caught up in those plastics. So environmentally, spot on, you know, and it's environmentally clean, it's giving off clean energy. So it's cleaning up the environment and it's giving off clean energy. There's no dirty emissions. So you've got that. You've also got, do you know, like big sort of delivery companies, like packaging, huge amount of packaging that goes into landfill, a huge amount. So what do you say? It's one of these big deliveries.
But it's almost like, I get what you're saying, but then it's almost like it needs to come at like state level, not just council level.
It will though, because you imagine people like Amazon, right? Or big truckers, you know, companies that truck goods full of, you know, first of all, they're using diesel, right? So you've got trucks there full of packaging, massive amounts of packaging being fueled on diesel. Hang on a sec. Rather than just landfill that packaging, why not put it into one of these things? Get a hydrogen fuel cell trucks are out there. They're being run on there. It's not a thing of the future. So you could power your trucks on the stuff you're throwing away.
Yeah.
Does it make sense? So rather than burning diesel, refuel them with hydrogen power, which is based off the stuff you're throwing away. It's like, it makes sense.
It does make sense, and it's all, I get it, but it's just like you actually start thinking about it, you go, but it's such a massive thing. It could happen, but it could take quite a while for somebody to adopt that, didn't it?
Big companies are, though. If you look at, I mean, listen to the podcast, there's Toyota, not small companies, Toyota, Volvo, Hyundai, all big companies have spent billions on hydrogen fuel cells. Now, if Powerhouse Energy goes to them and says, listen, the way you're producing hydrogen is not efficient, I understand you the concept, but I mean, if they can show them they can produce hydrogen to fuel a vehicle off basically waste plastics or tyres, then, because have you seen, I've got a picture, there's a picture in Korea of a tyre desert, the desert pretty much, tyres. That is fuel, that is actually fuel to be create clean fuel, you know, it's amazing.
It's piles of money.
Who was it that was saying this? Someone said to me, so, you know, these big companies like Amazon and all that, they have lots of packaging, you know, a lot of it's broken down or, basically, where does it all end up? Most of this packaging in landfill is not recycled. And I'm saying that's a huge power supply there. That's a huge source of fuel. You know, that's wasted.
My second question really is, what's the competition? Are these guys the only people?
In this area, yes, with clean emissions.
In this area? What area? The world?
Well, no, I mean in this sector where there's clean emissions, right. Where there's a modular thing. So, like I said, you go on there. I mean, do your own research. I've read through some of the presentations there. And the competition is really old-style incinerators, which give off a lot of gas, or they're inefficient in some way. But yeah, they've got the competition there, and basically, this, you know, they're way ahead. And I'm just thinking, wow, this is it's just one of these things. It's almost like, I just think, you know, it's one of these things you've got to, right now, and 9 million market cap, they all, that's all they are. All it takes is one big client, and it seems like they're talking to one, or they're in discussions with one, and they did the deal with one. They haven't mentioned who it is, but they did say it was, I've heard a couple of interviews by Keith, who said it's a subsidiary of a massive company, to adopt this and prove that it works, you know, and it'll go through the roof, absolutely go through the roof. I think, you know, I think as far as the next milestone is concerned, probably certification's next, so they have been allowed to operate it and do the trials, then they'll have commerciality then. I think they'll do the trials.
And how much would one of these flux capacitors going to cost?
Well, exactly, I don't know, I think they're about $5 million each to build one of these things. So I'm off the top of my head, I was looking at the presentation last night, but it's one of those things where I do love tech like that, you know. I'm just thinking, it solves so many issues there, because when you think of it, truck, all you do is, you know, there's never going to end, you're never going to get transport ending, you're always going to get deliveries of all stuff, right? And you always need, you know, these vans, lorries using diesel. Now everyone doesn't want that, no one wants that, so governments are all behind clean energy. So this company can produce clean energy, of course they're going to say, listen, there's no reason why you should now be on diesel, there's a company there who can, you know, you put your plastics and waste in there and then get hydrogen or gas out, or electricity, you know, so they can do electricity or hydrogen anyway. So it's and it's a very efficient system. So I'm thinking, you know, the momentum of every government producer in the world, forward thinking government, is behind, isn't it, getting rid of diesel and petrol. And yet, if you're a company that can provide a solution to that, of course they're going to try and help the government out. They're going to try and, you know, push that down. But I'm just thinking, anyway, PHE is ticker. Do your own research. It's one of the stocks I was quite excited by.
Are you?
Yeah. I went to bed last night thinking this is phenomenal.
Did you come across?
No, I didn't.
Didn't you get that? Maybe I should put a bit more enthusiasm into it.
No, yeah, you should get more involved in it.
Yeah. Needless to say, I've got to say, needless to say, I did buy some in stock, you know, because I'm excited by it. And it's one of the things that I bought stock then, you know, on the first chat with Keith afterwards, and I did some research. So I like that a lot. But just look through there. Look at this. Global demand for electricity continues to outpace supply. There's a 7% increase in demand by 2035. There's 1.7 billion new customers, 1.3 billion people without electricity worldwide. And construction costs range. And they're all stats on there. So the presentation is worth doing online. It's worth looking at. And they've got...
how much construction costs? You glossed over that.
No, that's for power stations. The construction costs range from...
I thought you were reading it. Oh, bloody wrong.
Construction costs range from $1.5 million to $7 million per megawatt, depending on the technology. So they're saying they can do it a lot cheaper than that. And they've got different kinds of technologies. Landfill, there's incineration, there's pyrolysis, there's gasification, there's plasma arc. But then it's got six different ways of, you know, things that how waste is got rid of. And they've got theirs at the end. So they're saying, and this is clean, no emissions, ultra-high temperature gasification, demolecularizes waste, converting it into syngas. So it's almost like the size of a, you know, like a container. Yeah, DMG. It's called...
Demolecularize, is that a word, isn't it?
Demolecularizes. Yeah, if I was in the presentation to get a gig here for them, I'd have to learn that word, because you wouldn't want to get a stumbling block on that.
No.
So DMG technology, right? This is just one more thing. The hydrogen component, the syngas, can be separated, sequestered, and delivered at 99.9995% purity, allowing DMG to become cornerstone of an economical so it's clean and efficient as well. The amount, like, sometimes you whatever you put in, you get out like almost 40% of what you put in, you know. But this is like, you know, you get a high percentage out calorifically of what you put in, the energy generated, you know. So it's a very efficient conversion rate as well. So it's
Just read the presentation.
That's why I said you need a little video to explain this, because it's phenomenal. I know. I'm a big fan of it. But do your own research.
Their presentation's on their website, is that what you said?
Yeah, yes. It is. You just go to, go to the investor section. It's £5 million per unit, yeah. There we are.
So it's amazing. It's one of those ones you go, well, that is a game changer, as they say, isn't it, potentially? But, need to do some research, need to understand what I'm buying into.
What do you think, Cynical Steve, what do you think?
No, it sounds a little bit too good to be true, but, you know.
I know what you mean, but do and check the chance. Do the research first. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's plenty of time. It's not, I mean, you're just rushing to a stock because they got certification first, then they're doing public and private trials and public trials. Yeah. They're based in, I think, is it Thornton Science Park, Thornbury Science Park, Thornton in Cheshire, which is part of the University of Cheshire, which they do testing and stuff there. But I think this next half this year... And that's, I mean, I've read back on things, and they never said this is now. We're now going from R&D to commercialization, but now they're saying that. And so you've got to sort of.
Basically, what you're saying, there's time for Steve to sell his house, get the money ready, and then once it's ready, boom, straight all in.
I would remortgage your house. You don't sell it, Steve, and then sell all the interior. Just get rid of everything from the inside.
Yeah.
Just a hollow hole. Maybe leave like a beanbag, or in fact, sell the beanbags. But you can get one of those blow up inflatable chairs, can't you? Mm. Just sit there, no telly, Steve, and wait.
Yeah. And then
put all your money into it.
Says, buy tomorrow.
Wait. Yeah.
And then just stick in an order and put all of your money in PHG.
Yeah. And obviously, you won't have a phone. So I don't know how I can contact you. You'd have to go down the local phone box or something. Or I'll call your mother. I'll call your mother's. Say once
send
a week.
A carrier pigeon.
Yeah. No, you go to your mother's once a week. Because your mother's once a week on Sunday, like for Sunday lunch. I'll call there and give you an update. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
And then, then some news will come in, it was bad, and Justin will get like an errand boy. Quick, run to Cardiff forthwith and tell Steve not to buy.
Tell him he's bought, tell him to sell.
Take this note immediately to Stephen in Cardiff. And then he'll send it out, and 4 days later the guy arrives and you've lost all your money.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
But it's one of these, like I said, all penny stocks are risky, but it's one of these things that's got, of course, there's risk, of course.
You know, what price is it at the moment then?
But the potential there. It's about a penny. You can buy. For let's have a look. You can buy. It's one of why the mid is 105, and you can buy. Last trades going through was 1.079. So you should just a tad over a penny there. All right.
Last question. What's their? I'll look into this. But what's their history? Where have they come from? How long have they been operating?
Well, they've gone through. Do you know? I spoke to a big shareholder recently, and he told me a lot of stuff. And he said it's gone through iterations. It's gone through because they've always been on this path, trying clean energy, you know, waste to energy, basically. But there's been several times where they've almost gone through, you know, because it's literally when you're doing a company like this, the R&D, it's the same kind of thing as exploration, you know, with your oil and gas company or something. You have to keep raising money, you know, and with no, you know, guaranteed success at the end of the line, it's very hard, it's very risky to raise money. And people think, because you're a listed company, oil and gas companies, exploration companies, they think they can always raise money. They can't, because, you know, there's no chance of return on the money. So, you know, the way you have to raise money is generally done at a discount via placing. So you can't just go to a bank and say, can you loan me some money? This is going to be a cracking idea. Because banks want revenue. They want, you know, they want something from you, you know, some kind of assurance. So, they've been in R&D research and development for years. And that now they've honed it into this, you know, this G3 unit, which is they've realized before, I don't think it was modular. I mean, it couldn't be, you know, transported. But now they've got these modular things. So you can basically park one in a municipal site, you know, in a tip, you know, next to the guys in the big tips. I mean, done by us. We've got a couple of really good recycling plants now. They've developed. They're massive, and they're always busy, you know, always. And you put one of these in the corner, you think, just check all the stuff in there, all the tyres, all the plastic in there. You're creating fuel. It's like, you know, it makes the most... So, they've been around for a while. I've only sort of known them really for in depth the last couple of hours. So I've been, last day or so. So I've been researching. But, but it's the future, isn't it? I mean, it's worth looking at the past, but it's the future now in this guise... with this G3 unit. Just check it out, guys. We've been chatting long enough anyway, haven't we?
Yeah.
The first time Steve sounded enthusiastic. I just want to go to bed. I've got a hangover. Yeah. Because the filly was, like, not too bad, mate. It was good, man. Mm-hmm. The filly's not looking too bad, actually. So what kind of a clientele are looking to attract in the Philly, Steve? Is it Phillies?
Philly.
That's a joke, Steve.
Steve is not with me. Philly.
Philly. Hello.
Right, okay then, Peter. Well, I'm probably Steve. Right, are you coming down this weekend, Peter? Kind of Steve's busy working. Good job not working today, Steve, because you've been a heck of a mess.
But well, as long as he's not in charge of any heavy machinery. Tomorrow, yeah, well, I'd quite fancy to doing a little reenactment of our golf game on the golf course, but the weather's not looking great.
Yeah, but I suggested, you know, Dunkirk, you know, two fellas going to the cinema. It's okay, there's a manly film. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, it's a manly film. No one's going to think we're boyfriends, you know.
A manly film with Harry Styles in.
Yeah. But no, I've heard amazing things about Dunkirk. People saying, listen, I've heard lots of people say the hype is justified. And in fact, Alan Green came on the podcast this week and he gave a quick movie review. He was so impressed with it. He said, listen, go and see it. It's one of those things that you almost believe. Obviously, you can never ever be there on the beach being bombed. But he said, as close as damage, you know, it's as close as you'll get watching a film. It really shakes you up and realise how scary it was. Maybe it's two straight heterosexual men who
are holding hands, skipping into the cinema.
Yeah, who are comfortable holding hands and snogging. We're comfortable with our sexuality. Do that.
Popcorn with a hole in the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. We're comfortable in our sexuality. Do that, me and you, Peter.
Yeah, I think we've reached that stage in life when we're okay with that. We're just skipping merrily into cinema, holding hands.
Lovely. All right, guys. Have a nice weekend. Where are you working, Stephen?
Oh, I'm doing a something in Newport.
Sounds excellent. Yeah. Isn't it? Very exotic. Newport. I was born in Newport. If you go through the city of Newport, you'll see on the sign, you say twinned with New York, and Justin Witt was born here.
I missed that before.
Yeah, so did I. I may get a sticker and actually put that on there. You imagine going around putting stickers on signs saying Justin Witt was born here. People are like, who's that? thanks, guys. Have a nice weekend. See you later, Peter. Hope you survive.
Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.